The next matter on our calendar is A19-0542, in the matter of the welfare of the children of AMF, JG-TN, and CLB. As you are getting situated, counsel for appellant, you'll have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, and counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes after that. And then counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. Please, when you approach the podium, state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Lucas Dawson, and I represent the appellant, L.O., in this matter. Your Honor, we're here today on a case that was a motion for an adoptive placement under Minnesota Statute 260C.607, Subdivision 6. The facts that are involved in this case is that we've got a great grandparent who had always been very involved with the children's lives. And
Ms. Dawson, I think we're very familiar with the facts, and
well,
we've read all the briefing on it. My question for you is, do you agree that Minnesota Statute 260C.607 Subdivision 6 is unambiguous in its requirement that a home study be completed before a motion for an order for adoptive placement can be filed?
Just so I understand your question right, the question is the statute unambiguous?
Yes,
okay.
In that requirement.
Your Honor, I believe that the statute is unambiguous, but I do not believe that the statute requires that the home study be filed with the initial paperwork. I believe that the statute, when you read it in conjunction with Minnesota Statute 259.41, which is what is referenced in Subdivision 6, I believe it is A, it refers you to the Adoption Home Study statute, which does tell you that the Adoption Home Study, especially in the case of an agency placement, only has to be filed with the adoption petition and not
before. Well, the language says a relative or child's foster parent may file a motion for an order for adoptive placement of a child who is under guardianship if the relative or the foster parent has an adoption home study under the statute you cite, 259.41. That seems to clearly say that in order to, and this is the way it was acknowledged at the hearing by counsel for appellant, that you need the home study as a prerequisite to filing the motion.
And I definitely understand that question, and my answer might be a little bit longer, but I promise I will address it. I have been doing these motions now for a number of years. At my initial glance some years back at this statute, my initial interpretation was that, as you've said, that the home study did have to be filed with it. It really wasn't, quite frankly, until this case and until we had the challenges involved in this case that I really dug further into the statute, looked at what the statute actually says, and the statute also actually refers to 259.41. And then when you go to 259.41, when we're looking at an adoption through an agency placement, 259.41 specifically says that the home study does not have to be filed until the adoption petition is filed.
Wait, what? I want to find that language. It's in 259.41A?
Yes.
Okay, and what?
I'd had it up on my laptop. I apologize. I didn't have the printed one in front of me. But I believe that it is partway down in that first paragraph where it talks about, in the case of an agency placement, which is what we have here, okay, the adoption home study is filed at the time of the adoption petition.
So in an agency, is this a sentence? In an agency placement, the report must be filed with the court at the time the adoption petition is filed?
Yes.
Is that it? And how does that relate to the relative's motion under Subdivision 6 to challenge the agency's denial as unreasonable?
Well, Your Honor, the 260C.607 specifically says that this home study is done pursuant to 259.41. And if 259.41 does not actually require the home study until the time of the adoption petition, then that's where you've got, you can't just read one statute and ignore the other statute that it actually refers you to. And further, as outlined in the brief, by reviewing that, I think the case law has been very clear in these cases that have been coming down from the Court of Appeals that we do need to have this relative preference and that needs to be happening.
And would a petition under, and I'm sorry if I'm not that familiar with this process, but a petition under 259.41, the petition that's referencing, with respect to great-grandmother here, that petition, there was never a petition filed.
No,
for her.
Correct.
And,
right.
And that petition would have, when would that petition, if ever, have occurred? After the motion for the, that she was filing is determined?
So the way that it would work under 260C point, because I realize we're jumping between some statutes mm-hmm. here. But the way that the petition works in these cases when you read Chapter 260C is that the relative, files the motion for the adaptive placement. The court has to make the initial determination of was the agency unreasonable. That's the prima facie determination. Then an evidentiary hearing is set. Mm-hmm. If, after the conclusion of the evidentiary hearing, the court finds that the agency was unreasonable mm-hmm. and that it is in the child's best interest, then the court can order that the child be placed with the relative. Now, at that point, that's still not the adoption petition yet. We're still not, mm-hmm. not there. When you look at children who are under guardianship, they're by virtue of the statute and how we look at it, they're under guardianship of the Commissioner of Human Services. You then first have to have an adoption placement agreement that is executed. There's then also a waiting period. Typically want to make sure it's a good placement. Mm-hmm. Then at that point, the adoption petition is actually filed down the road.
Okay, so I sort of assumed that would be the time frame. So I think what you're saying then is that under the motion of Subdivision 6, I mean, you never get, a great-grandmother would never get to a petition unless she prevailed on a motion under Subdivision 6.
Correct.
And so what you're saying is that under Subdivision 6, the home study is not required whatsoever in order to resolve that motion.
Well, no,
that motion
can be resolved
utterly without a home study because that only comes into place later on a petition.
Well, and I would agree. And I think that the way you read that then is the statute is really looking at it is was the agency unreasonable in failing to place this child with this family? And so the statute's looking at the unreasonableness and would the placement be in the best interest of the child?
Why would there be any mention of a home study if it's not actually required until the motion is resolved favorably?
Well, and I think that goes to really when you look at what the purpose of the home study is the purpose of the home study is really, I mean, it's a creature of statute. It's what you're looking at. Sorry, I'm jumping around in my head here. So when we're looking at the home study, they're looking at essentially the home itself. And in fact, I've had a number of home studies where the child's not even actually placed in the home. So we're not really actually evaluating at that point of that relative and the relationship with the child. You're only specifically looking at the home, essentially.
Counsel, I'm struggling with that interpretation because, I mean, the plain language of 260C, 0.607 subdivision 6 clearly states that a relative may file a motion for adoptive placement, but only if that home study basically is in hand. And I mean, that seems to be the plain reading of that statute, is that you need to have that home study. And that seems to make sense, because why should the court and the parties and the child or children go through this process if nobody knows for sure whether or not that particular home, that particular relative, would even be approved in the first place? Why waste all that energy? Why shouldn't we? I read this as a pre-approval requirement. A relative can file a motion as long as that relative is pre-approved, and unless and until that relative is pre-approved, you can't even file a motion Isn't that really what the statute says?
Well, no, because you then have to look at the statute, because there's two parts to this. There's the in-state relatives as well as the out-of-state relatives.
Right, but we don't have to worry about out-state for this.
Well, but I think it's instructive for when looking at the statute, because the out-of-state relative statute specifically says that the home study is filed with the pleadings. That the specific filed with the pleadings is missing from that first part for the in-state relatives.
Right,
that only refers you...
But for the in-state, you have that filing a motion. It specifically says you have to file that with the motion.
But that's actually, quite frankly, adding language, because I believe it says pursuant to 259, who have a home study under 259.41. And when you go look at 259.41, that statute does not require you to file a home study until the adoption petition.
But that's not how 259.41 is being referenced, though. The 259.41 is only being referenced in the conjunction of having that home study done, approving the relative. And then once you have that approval, then you can go ahead and file the motion for adoptive placement.
Well, and I think the problem then that we get into is that it does say under 259.41, and I don't think that we can just ignore what 259.41 tells us.
It's not ignoring it, but it has to be put in context of what subdivision 6 here of 260C.607 says.
Well, but then if you're putting it in the entire context, then it cannot be ignored that the statute has a relative placement, that when you're looking at these home studies, agencies have 90 days to complete, to even acknowledge them. And then from there, when we're looking at not only with the relative placement, but the 90-day waiting period, then we've got a statute that essentially the only relatives that are gonna get in are the ones who somehow early on decide they're gonna go get a home study. And that could never have been the intent of the legislature when you look at 260C.212, which really does give the relatives first preference.
But you're getting into other canons of statutory construction. And if the statute is unambiguous, we just looked at the plain meaning. We don't get into that. You made arguments on public policy. Those aren't relevant to our analysis if it's unambiguous. And you said earlier that it's unambiguous.
I'm thinking about this one. And I guess my initial read of it was that when you go to 259.41, that's where we get into the fact that the home study is not due until the time of the adoption petition. Based on this discussion here today, I mean, I think there's definitely room for what did the legislature mean by all of this.
Well, I think it meant that later on when you have you definitely need that home study in hand, but that doesn't mean that let me be clear, 260C.607 subdivision 6 can't have an earlier requirement of when that home study has to be in hand. And I think it makes it very clear you need to have that in hand when you want to file a motion for adoptive placement.
Well, I guess that's where, obviously, I respectfully disagree, and that's based on my reading of it, and also the practice of this, of then essentially, like in this scenario where we've got a very involved family member who steps forward before a placement is ever even made, and yet the agency then essentially it appears the agency even was considering her. They're referring her for home studies. And yet then the agency goes and just makes the adoptive placement, essentially kind of just goes around it all. And then we've got a problem of a family member is being told they're being considered for a placement, and then they're essentially just circumvented with now a 30-day timeline of what do you do with that? And that...
Well, the 30-day timeline is statutory. I mean, she could have filed her motion long before the 30-day timeline kicked in, right? I mean, the 30-day timeline was her notice that there's a pre-adoptive placement taking place here, and you have 30 days to file a motion objecting to it or file your own motion. She filed it on the 30th day, as I understand. So, you know, according to one of the briefs, 233 days had gone by already by the time she got around to filing her motion. So It wasn't the county imposing a 30-day timeline. That's statutory.
Right, and I'm not trying to suggest that it was the county. I mean, I do understand the statute with the 30-day timeline. I think the problem that we're getting into then is you've got a family member who actually stepped forward and said, I want to be placement, before the children were ever even placed with a non-relative. And at that point, the county already knew they had already placed with her. If they had had a concern as to whether she would have been an appropriate placement, for example, for a background study or some sort of a safety concern like that, they never would have placed with her in the beginning. And so we've got this, all of this other, these other issues that are essentially going on in the background, and you get into then this 30-day timeline where technically an agency would have had 90 days, and in the affidavit, it even outlines that Lutheran Social Services had indicated it would take 120 days to complete a home study. And I see that I'm out of time, so obviously I'll wait for any questions on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Council for respondent, you have 15 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alicia Nguyen, and I am an assistant county attorney in Beltrami County. I represent Beltrami County Health and Human Services in this matter. There's been a lot of arguments made by counsel in looking at these two statutes together. We've got 259.41 and 260C.607 subdivision 6. In looking at those, I agree with the court's questioning and analysis that 260C.607 subdivision 6 is providing additional information. It's a different situation. We're here for a motion for adoptive placement. Yes, we're referencing 259.41. Why are we doing that? Because 259.41 provides all of the necessary components of that adoption study. Here's the things that you need to have done and checked as a part of that adoption study. And that is the home study we are referencing. So in this particular situation, when that relative is coming forward, we need to have confirmation that that relative is somebody who's committed. There's somebody who's been approved. These questions of will they be approved? When would they be approved? Why should a child have to wait to have a finalization in their permanency? Because we don't have those answers yet. In appellant's brief, there's a discussion that there's inevitable delay. And there's inevitable delay that's caused in bringing forward these motions for adoptive placement. And that's accurate. There is some delay that's in there. There's the delay in having the evidentiary hearing. There's the delay in having the court's decision from that. But those are all predictable delays that the court is considering and that the legislature is considering in writing these statutes. Those delays are appropriate for children because, yes, we do have relative preference. Yes, there is this balance between relative preference and children permanency timelines. So what this statute is doing here and what I see it doing here is exactly what we see in every child protection matter. Yes, we give relatives preference. Yes, it's in the best interest of children that if a relative is appropriate, that's where we go. But in a situation where we don't know for sure if that relative is going to work out, there may be concerns that that relative is going to work out, we don't have that approved home study and we know for sure it's going to work, why should kids just wait in the balance? There's a lot of case law on this where the courts, there's statutes for timelines, all of these different things surrounding child protection law that support that these delays that are unnecessary for children, we shouldn't be having children at the expense of this. This is detrimental to children to have them just basically waiting in the balance while something is figured out. And I think that one of the biggest flaws in appellant's argument is that there was a previous acknowledgement. There was an acknowledgement that we know this home study is needed before we go forward.
We are interpreting the statute, though, and what the district court decided here. What about the difference that opposing counsel referenced between little one and little two under subdivision six and small two for non-residents requires that this expressly says the study must be filed with the motion, whereas the earlier subdivision is not, or subpart.
And I understand appellant bringing forward that discussion. However, I think the biggest issue with that is that it's focusing more on the filing of the home study. Not having a home study, it's filing. Non-residents are required to file it at the time. Whereas a resident, if I have it and I'm a resident, that's sufficient to satisfy the statute. The filing component isn't something that's required of residents at that point in time. Yes, it is certainly required when we get to the point that the petition is filed. That's when the resident has to make sure that their home study is filed with the court. But given that a non-resident of Minnesota, I mean, there's additional distinctions there that the adoption home study is by an agency that's licensed or approved to complete an adoption home study. So there's different licensing requirements in different states.
Sure.
I think that this is recognizing that and saying, we want you to file it non-resident so we can verify it and look through it and make sure that it satisfies the statute.
Does a home study play a role, though, in a motion for a resident? I mean, I know like the argument you have to have it. Does it come into, is it part of the hearing on the motion? Does it ever get filed? Does it ever become part of it?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it becomes part of the hearing. Perhaps it could if it has a concerning information in it that is discussed at the hearing. But I think the statute here is more making sure that that component is satisfied just to eliminate those questions of, if we are successful upon having this hearing, if appellant is successful in proving what they need to as a part of the evidentiary hearing, we know we can move forward with that or that placement right away. There are no questions. If there's a petition that's to follow, there's not going to be any uncertainty that happens. We can get this process moving and keep going forward, because that's what we're trying to do in child protection matters, is keep moving forward. And I think this statute provides that perfect balance of giving the relative an opportunity to come forward. They have this 30-day notice where it's this is your last chance, relative. If this is something that you're interested in, you have 30 more days to file this motion. And that just, it didn't happen in this file. They didn't have that component, and that component was absolutely required and necessary.
What relevance, if any, are the facts that great-grandmother was expressed her interest, and there were over a course of, I think, a couple months, referrals and sort of serial referrals that sounds like, as far as we know, through no fault of her own, didn't end up in completion of a home study?
And I think that is something that appellant was more arguing at the district court level when this motion came forward, that she had stepped forward. There was differing information from the county on how that played out and what we interpreted as her stepping forward and her wavering desire to be an option or to complete that home study. It was kind of a he said, she said scenario at the district court level, where the district court was the one that was in the best position to look at that scenario and determine, is this a situation where waiver could potentially be appropriate? It's not even addressed for the home study as a part of the statute. It's clearly addressed for a different portion, which is the residency element, not even addressed for the home study element. But the district court looked at that scenario. The district court was the same judge that had been there present when she came forward before and noted what her interest was and was there throughout this entire proceeding. And the district court said, no, this waiver is not going to be granted, because I don't find that this being the fault of the agency. You had plenty of time. You didn't satisfy the requirement. Therefore, the motion is denied.
I have a question along those lines, Ms. Nguyen. Is on the waiver argument, would the district court be within its discretion to look at the facts and say, okay, you've got a relative here, you've got a relative who has been very involved, who has taken care of the children a couple days a week, and there's no question, as we find out later, that she's approved. So there's no question along those lines. Why would the district court be in its discretion to say, you know, I see what the statute says, but in the best interest of the child and any other factors, I think that this requirement should be waived?
And based upon how I read the statute and how the statute is written, I would say no. I would say that...
So a relative would never be able to get waiver?
By how the statute is written. I believe the statute is written very with intent to specifically, as I said, so if we're looking at one, it says the court may waive the residency requirement. So that's another requirement to filing this motion for adoptive placement. The legislature clearly puts out a scenario where it thinks waiver would be appropriate for that requirement. It doesn't address if waiver would be appropriate for the requirement of having the home study. And I think the reasoning for that is the legislature is acknowledging these relatives have been involved from the very beginning. They've known that this is coming. Particularly in this case, we had a relative that attended every single hearing but one. This relative acknowledged that they had a referral even from their own counsel for an adoption home study agency to complete the adoption home study, but she didn't move forward with it. There's plenty of opportunity there, and I think that the legislature recognizes that in the statute and doesn't find waiver being appropriate. It's something that you should have plenty of time to do. There should be no excuse for why you can't go forward with it. Now, I understand, as I said, in this situation, it's a he said, she said regarding whose fault was it that these referrals didn't go through or what happened here. But the bottom line is the relative had plenty of time to do this.
Right, but it's still a pretty significant decision as to whether or not you're going to be taking care of a child or children. It's not a decision that should be entered into lightly. And if somebody is taking the time to think it through very, very carefully, it seems like it's a pretty harsh result in this situation. Why shouldn't the district court have waived or granted an extension of time to allow the home study results to come through before making a decision?
And I think if you look at the facts of this case specifically with the level of involvement, it came when we were very first looking at placement back in February 14th, 2017, I believe, was the first time that that relative was contacted. There has been a lot of time that this relative had to consider this. This wasn't something that just came forward when all of a sudden now we're at permanency
we don't know what to do. But the conditions for the grandparents had changed. They had some physical issues early on that resolved themselves later on.
And that was information that wasn't provided to the county until that very first time she stepped forward. There was no noted interest. There was conversation that continued to occur between the county and the relative. Even at the point when we had the relative that was initially going to be the permanency option, when that relative fell through, there was a conversation with this relative about what was going to happen next.
The aunt or great aunt, I believe?
Yes, the aunt. About what was going to happen next and that we were looking at non-relative options. There wasn't a conversation at that point that said, oh, I don't have those health reasons that I told you about before. I'm actually fine to take placement, or I'm considering at this point, now that you're looking at somebody else, I'm ready to come forward and be that person, or at least I'm thinking about it. That didn't happen until several months later. So there was some delay there, and that delay concerns the county and makes the county think, well, these issues that have been presented to us in the past must be ongoing issues, because if they weren't, why wouldn't she come forward and tell us that I no longer have health concerns? So as far as the county was concerned, that still was an issue. And when it comes to the adoption home study, yes, we made referrals. Absolutely. We did that because we understand relative preference. We made three different referrals under this situation. However, we can't just stop every other proceeding for the children at this time. We have to do concurrent planning as well, and that's exactly what we are doing. We had concerns that maybe she went past the physical based on the information she had given us before. But we still referred, and had she been able to complete a home study, had she satisfied that part of the statute and said, look, here's my home study, I can have these kids, the agency may have taken a different route. But that's not the case of what happened here. And I would also just like to clarify for the record, the fact that she was approved, that is something that came in after the appellate record, I believe. I mean, the appellant is appealing the March 18th order. The order that is referenced in appellant's brief and that's mentioned here today regarding approval was the April order, which happened almost a month later. For the purposes of this appeal, in looking at what the district court had and the information that they had at the time that they made this decision, that information wasn't known, and that only came in after the fact. So I would say that that information is irrelevant at this point. I see I have 2 additional minutes. Were there any additional questions? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Dawson, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
wanted to briefly touch on a few points that were made, as well as I'm sure answer any additional questions that you may have. First, there were some discussions about the conversations that had happened and who would step forward. The record, what's before the court, what the record is, and it's based on my client's affidavit, is that after the relative placement fell through, she did go to the county and tried to talk to them and was told that she did not need to contact the county again and she did not need to be in contact with them. So I think when you look at, you have to look at this as a whole, in that you've got a relative who thought the children were going to be placed with relatives, thought that the children would be staying within the family and that she would continue to maintain that contact. When that fell through, she went back to the county and was told she did not need to contact them, then did go to the court and said, I do want to be considered, before the children were placed in their non-relative pre-adoptive home. And I think that that's an extremely important way that the facts progressed, in that you do have this relative that steps forward. And I think this court, we have to look at it as, what were the present circumstances when she stepped forward? When she stepped forward, her health concerns were resolved. She was very adamant that she wanted the children placed with her and that the children would be safe and she would provide them with a good home. That is what should have been considered, and that is where the agency was unreasonable. And in addition, I believe some—
Do we even get to the unreasonable argument, though, or the unreasonable issue if we don't get beyond the statutory construction issue?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
If we don't get beyond the statutory construction issue in terms of whether a home study is a prerequisite to filing the motion, do we even need to address the whether the county was reasonable or unreasonable?
No, I would say that I'm agreeing with you. I believe that if the court says that as a form of statutory construction, she had to have the home study and she failed, motion, then you would not get to the second prong. That would be my review of how that would be interpreted. Okay. I would agree with you there. I guess, were there any other questions? I think the main concern that I was really hearing is that when we're talking about this, there seems to be more of this harsh result that comes from a form over function and what really works, especially when you've got relatives stepping forward during child protection cases. And relatives, and this is probably more from practical experience, they don't know. They don't understand what's going on. They don't understand where the process is at. That's why they come to attorneys, and that's why we're the ones that often have to try to get that information. Relatives would not be told if an adoptive placement is necessarily being made or if an adoptive placement agreement is even being signed. That, quite frankly, would all be confidential data. And so to give this harsh result of you got the notice of adoptive placement that does take a time period to complete, they're first done with the county, they're then sent off to the Department of Human Services to then be reviewed and signed and sent back. I mean, this can take a couple of months. And so family members don't know that. They don't know when that process is happening. And then you get this surprise, you have 30 days.
But the legislature's not only looking at the interests of the family members. I mean, the overarching public policy behind all these statutes really is the best interest of the children. And shouldn't that inform us in terms of making our statutory interpretation determination?
I would agree that the legislature is the overarching concern in any child protection case should be the best interest of the children. And along those lines, the legislature has also determined that family preference is in the best interest of the children and that family should be considered first, consistent with that being in the child's best interest. And so the child protection statutes really often all have to be read together, and what is their full purpose? What are we really trying to accomplish? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for the arguments and the briefing on this. Very well done. We will be issuing an order within the statutory time frame. And with that is our last of the three oral arguments on this calendar. And with that, court is adjourned.